Welcome to episode 276 of the Bobbycast. I will be talking with Dina Carter, who you know from Strawberry Wine. Did I shave my legs for this? We danced, then we danced. Just so many, but that song is 25 years old. Strawberry Wine, which was one of the biggest songs of my young life.
Mm-hmm.
Eddie's here.
Oh yeah, I'm here. What's up?
But really, this song was generational in that everybody knew it, and it was a woman singing a song about women, but guys sang it too and weren't embarrassed to sing it.
Yeah. Like, we'll even sing this today.
Which was weird for a 12-year-old boy. Maybe he was older than that. 15, no, I guess.
We were in high school.
Yeah, 14 or 15-year-old.
So, yeah.
So to be able to sing this song loud and be proud.
Yeah.
You know, you don't want to sing girl songs?
It's okay.
So we'll talk to her coming up in a little bit. The new music top five this week, Loretta Lynn released Coal Miner's Daughter to commemorate the 50th anniversary of the release of her signature song, but it's a recitation. Here is the new version.
Well, I was born to coal miner's daughter in a cabin on a hill in Butcher Holler. We were poor, but we had love. That's the one thing that my daddy made sure of.
Sounds more like a poem.
Does she sing at all?
It's still pretty cool.
It's all spoken, yeah.
My daddy, he worked all night in the Van Leer coal mines. All day long in the field of hoeing corn.
Number four, Amanda Shires released a cover of the Genesis classic, That's All. The lyric video is an animated take on 2020, the year, featuring murder hornets, burning cities, protest signs, and closed concert venues. Here's a clip of That's All. That is a jam from Genesis.
Yeah, and that's a jam right now. I like this version.
Did you know what that song was when I said That's All?
Nah. I don't know it by the title.
To my toes. Yeah, turn it up. It's always said to be. And now I'm looking at me. It's the same. It's just a shame. That's all. That's jam, huh?
Yeah, so good.
Aaron Watson has a new album called American Soul. Here is his song, Whispered My Name, that's been out. Because when you whisper my name, you fire that engine up. Feel that four on the floor. And here's a new song called Boots. Like a record, we're spinning around, and I can't keep my boots on the ground. When I fall, Barry Gibb has a new album called Greenfields, The Gibb Brothers Songbook Volume 1. Now, Barry Gibb from the Bee Gees.
Yeah.
He has a new song called Words with Dolly Parton. Here's that. Talk in everlasting words and dedicate them all to me. Have you seen the Bee Gees documentary?
No.
It's on HBO Max.
And really good?
I've almost started it a few times, but either something's come up or Caitlin's been like, nah, let's not watch that. She has no interest in the Bee Gees.
Sure.
It was before me as well, but
yeah.
Well, I think we're just music nerds. I think I'm going to watch it this week. I think Barry Gibb and Dolly are coming on the show.
No way.
Next week. I think.
That'd be awesome.
I don't think in person because they're both older.
Oh, corona, right.
So I think we'll just talk to them.
What I like about this sound, what you just played right there, it's just what they used to sound like. Like, they didn't say, you know what, guys, it's 2021. Let's try to make it sound new.
I like it when he sings like this.
Let's just keep it the way we had it back in the 70s.
Maybe you were running with it. Maybe you were someone that was staying alive. I like when he sings that. And number one, Morgan Wallen has a new album called Dangerous. Here is the title track, Dangerous. I don't wanna go down there, do what we used to. Twist the top off another round. Hell, I got enough loose screws. You should know it's a double album, so it's like 30 songs. Here's another new one called Warning. Should've come with a warning. Don't sit right there, don't sip on what they're pouring. That one slaps a little bit.
Boom, 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 boom.
Man, I go to Sonic and turn that up. People be like, dang.
Who's that?
Wow. They're pretty dark, and that's a slightly different sound.
Yeah.
Albums out today. Sammy Hagar and The Circle, Lockdown 2020. Passenger, Songs for the Drunk and Brokenhearted, which I like Passenger. Blue Oyster Cult, Live 83, a reissue, but it's a live record. A song we missed on vacation that I have heard 10 million times in my house. When Caitlin's cooking, she plays music. Justin Bieber released a new song called Anyone on New Year's Day. Here you go. You are the only
If it's not you, it's not anyone. Why is he so good?
He is good. And I was at the vending machine yesterday, and I was talking about how good Justin Bieber was. People were like, what are you talking about? You're an adult. I'm an adult that doesn't care what people think about my musical opinions anymore, you know?
This was your vending machine conversation?
Mm-hmm.
Interesting.
I don't know how it was. Were you with me?
You had a vending machine.
With a random person?
At work.
Oh.
I was at a vending machine, and I was like, I have no shame in loving Justin. Somebody had questioned me about it, because I said, Harry Styles and Justin Bieber. You know, I wasn't the vending machine. I was at the jukebox in my house.
Oh, way different.
Okay, I just knew I was at some sort different. Of machine okay. looking at the... We have a jukebox in my house, and it hasn't been... don't have music put in it yet. It's a really cool old jukebox. But as of today, it works.
Do you need records?
Well, they're the small records.
Yeah, I have small records.
And 45? a friend to me said, hey, what would you put in there if you could? If one side was Caitlin's, one side was yours.
Love it.
And I said, I would do John Mayer... and like a 90s country assortment.
Mm.
And I said, Caitlin would do Justin Bieber and Harry Styles. And I said, you know what? I'd probably play on that side a lot too.
Yeah.
And he was like, what do you mean? I said, they're both freaking great. I know they were kid pop stars, but they've matured in their music.
Yeah, for sure.
Harry Styles is amazing.
He's really
His music's
good.
Amazing. Parker McCollum released a song called To Be Loved By You. Here you go. In music news, the Grammys have been rescheduled from January 31st to March 14th, COVID. And, you know, some award shows were happening, but because COVID has gotten so bad, especially in L.A., L.A. County, they've shut down all production.
Mm.
You can't shoot anything there right now. So the Grammys have been rescheduled. Quote, after thoughtful conversation with health experts, our network partner CBS, our host and artist scheduled to appear, we've made the decision to postpone. So Trevor Noah is still going to host. You know, there was some controversy about Blake Shelton's latest single, Minimum Wage. Okay. It's dumb.
Come on.
It's a dumb controversy, a bit contrived. Ronnie Dunn was speaking out. They're like, Ronnie Dunn's the only one to speak out. I was like, I spoke out to millions of people on my radio show.
You did? I was there.
Maybe people are just used to me saying dumb stuff.
They just expect it from
it's
you.
It's just like, we don't even pay attention to that. So there's that. Ricky Skaggs had quadruple bypass surgery last summer, but kept it quiet until now.
Wow.
He tells people that he was experiencing tightness in his chest and shortness of breath, but he did not have a heart attack. An angiogram convinced him to have surgery, and he feels 150 cent better because of it.
You know Ricky pretty well. Do you know this?
Uh-uh. And I've talked to him. Corona has hurt my sense of time. I feel like I've talked to him a bunch.
Oh, you don't know how to place the time when you talk to someone?
But maybe I haven't talked to him since COVID.
Well, the last time I saw you talk to him was at the Opry backstage. I think he was playing and we were playing. So that must have been, February? Probably.
So that's probably the last time I talked to him then. But yeah, I love him. He oddly loves me, which is crazy.
Yeah.
So
I mean, he talks to you like you guys are best buds.
I didn't know that had happened. No, but I don't know that would have come up because we're not close like that. Mm-hmm. Like, hey, man, how are you? Well, I'm glad you asked. I just had heart surgery.
I don't know, but you just know all sorts of weird random stuff.
Reba McEntire's son got engaged. She's about to be the mother of the groom, the singer's son, Shelby. The singer's son, Shelby's the guy.
Yeah.
I saw this Instagram post where the girl, who's Marissa Branch, people have posted it, and she went and commented. She was like, hey, I'm not the one that just got divorced for Kelly Clarkson. This is not the same.
Okay, that's not the same guy.
Yeah, she's like, so you guys get off. It was pretty funny.
That was my question. I thought that was the same dude.
It's pretty funny. Shelby announced the news with a picture of him popping the question at Epcot at Disney World. Parker McCollum set for a Grand Ole Opry debut, which is pretty cool. February 6th, I will be there. Kid Rock donates $100,000 to Small Business COVID Relief Fund. He's doing his part with small businesses, so $100,000 there, which is great. Lil Nas X has released a children's book. Hmm. And Tim Tebow's putting out a book next week. We're talking to him on the show.
Yep.
And then someone made a list of the 101 most anticipated albums of 2021. So here you go. At number 101. I'll read you some of them. Drake, Foo Fighters, Lil Nas X, Chili Peppers, Queens of the Stone Age, My Morning Jacket.
Ooh, I like them.
Adele, Billie Eilish, Kacey Musgraves, Kendrick Lamar, Lord. You know, it's cool that Foo Fighters still make the list of cool.
Yeah.
Because Dave Grohl's got to be 50.
For sure. Yeah, for sure. I mean, he's
maybe 54.
And you're talking about a dad with kids that are probably getting ready to go to college.
How old is he?
51.
Okay, and how about Anthony Kiedis and Red Hot Chili Peppers?
Because doing it.
They have a new record, and it's listed as a top five. I mean, they're from our childhood.
Yes.
But The Rock world, there's not a lot there.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure there's a lot of bands, but that format doesn't really put out superstars right now, occasional.
He's 58.
Anthony Kiedis is 58 years old.
And he's so ripped and it looks good.
I don't know if he still is.
He's got to be.
Or if it's like an Aaron Tippin thing where he always just is, even if he's not.
Aaron Tippin's so ripped. Did you guys ever see that video of the Chili Peppers playing somebody's kid's elementary school?
Is it old?
No. This happened like maybe three or four years ago.
Uh-uh.
I think it was Chad Smith, the drummer. His kid, the principal asked like, hey, would the band come play or whatever, the auditorium. And it was a Chili Peppers set.
At the kid's school?
Anthony Kiedis was jumping up and down and rocking his head, and Chad Smith was just going crazy in the drums. Flea was doing his thing. They did not hold back. And all these kids are just like, okay. I don't know what this is.
That
would
be like us as kids, and REO Speedwagon shows up, and we don't really know because we're too young to even like that music. We know our parents liked it. And we're like, huh.
I just feel like if someone's going to play a school like that, they would be like, all right, children, not them. They're like, tink, 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 let's go.
I got to Google that. Coming up, we'll talk to Deanna Carter. We're going to hit this real quick on the other side of this. Songs meant for other artists, which is the music topic we'll talk about here. Songs that were made for other artists and didn't, and then somebody else cut it and became a big hit. So we'll talk about that coming up. I want to talk about country hits that were meant for other artists. Now, I saw this article on The Boot, pretty fascinating article. Some of these I heard of, and I've even talked to some of these artists about it, but some of these blew my mind too. Sometimes there's an artist or a manager who says, this is probably not for you. And then they don't cut it. And maybe it wasn't for them. Maybe it wouldn't have been a big smash for that artist. And then someone else gets it and it goes on to be a big success. So it's just hard to imagine some of these songs that are so defined by the person singing them being as memorable within it. But I'm sure some of them would have been.
Right.
So let's talk about the stories behind some of these songs. And then would it have worked with the other artist?
I mean, this is almost the same argument as an actor that turned down a role.
Good. Yeah.
And then we saw the movie and we're like, no way Tom Hanks couldn't play Tom Cruise in that movie. But he could.
Here you go. Up first, Johnny Cash, Take Me Home, Country Roads.
Ooh. All right. Well,
this song was originally intended for Johnny Cash. The song's co-writers, Bill Danoff and Taffy Nivert, intended to sell it to Cash. But when John Denver heard it, he was like, I got to have this song. They all worked together to rework the lyrics, and it eventually became Denver's signature song.
Let's try it.
Take me home.
I mean, it sounds weird, but I'm sure you would have made it work.
This song, though, makes, with Johnny, again, this is all speculative, so I'm not right. There's no right or wrong here. So I'm going to say something pretty dumb. I don't think it would have worked for Johnny Cash.
Really?
Because I don't think this song it would have worked fine. But I'm saying I don't think it would have been as big of a hit because he had so many hits that I think it would have just fallen into the context of Johnny Cash. Yeah. Because there was nothing that screamed Johnny Cash in this song except just another good song.
Right.
John Denver, this song, he made it about him.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it worked for John Denver because it was John representing a lot of people singing about his life, where with Johnny, he sings a lot about that. I just don't think it would have been the same.
Good point. You're just saying it probably wouldn't have been as big as it was for John Denver for Johnny Cash.
It wouldn't have been as impactful on Johnny as it was for John Denver.
Right.
Because Johnny had a ton of hits.
But it still would have been a jam. Take me home.
Take me home. June, you take this line. So Diamond Rio had this song, Unbelievable. This song was meant for George Jones.
I hear it, right?
The deep.
Don't you hear, what's the car one? He's like, the George Jones car one. What's it called? That's not Hot Rod Lincoln. I'm drawing a blank, but I don't know. It kind of sounds like this.
Yeah, I don't know.
You don't know what I'm talking about?
I hear it.
No, I can totally hear George Jones doing this.
All right, that's an odd one. Okay, here we go. Did you find the song, Mike, he's talking about?
No.
Yeah, I don't know
what I'm talking about.
Dierks Bentley has four. One, he was going to get Whiskey Lullaby.
Oh, wow. That'd be good. And
pulled the trigger. This is one of my favorite country songs of all time. And finally drank away her
memory.
Drink a Beer, so I'm gonna sit right here, which is Luke with Chris Stapleton. Watching Airplanes. I'm just sitting out here watching airplanes. And I Drive Your Truck, Lee Bryce. I drive your truck. Now, think about this for a second. Does Dirk, and love Dirks, he's a friend.
Yeah.
Bunch of hits. Does he have a song that's as big, like, as the, any of those four, that's as long-lasting and saying, Riser, What Was I Thinking?
Yeah, I would have gone.
I don't know that he does. I'm just throwing out the big hits here. Because Whiskey Lullaby is a
massive
25-year song.
Yeah.
I Drive Your Truck won the CMA for Song of the Year. Maybe he is up there with Watching Airplanes and Drink a Beer.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, and he's such a deep, all his songs are deep. You know, I was listening to one on the way here. Like, it's not your regular country song where it's like, you know, just to tell, I'm telling you a story. It's always like, I saw a tree and it reminded me of this. Like, you know, it was always like a little one level deeper. And that's kind of what's the first song you said?
Whiskey Lullaby.
Whiskey Lullaby is. I mean, that's a deep, deep song. And then the last one.
Drive Your Truck.
I Drive Your Truck. Yeah. To me, I think those are the two that he would have done really good with. The two in the middle, though, I don't really see Dirks doing that.
I wonder if he'd have made it a duet, Whiskey Lullaby.
Yeah.
Which was a big deal. And Alison Krauss is freaking awesome. Brad Paisley and Alison Krauss had that one. Before the two recorded it, the song sat for 3 years. Dirks listened to it but decided to pass on it because he never heard it as a duet via the boot. Chris Stapleton and Jim Beavers, who we've done a podcast with, who's a friend of ours, who, has written a bunch of Raging Idiot stuff with us.
Yes, he has. He also wrote
but he wrote Drink a Beer, and the song was pitched to Dierks Bentley. He turned down the track, which was big for Luke Bryan. Dierks Bentley almost took Watching Airplanes. The song was written by Jim Beavers.
Yeah.
And ultimately went to Gary Allen. Gary Allen's probably glad he got it because it's a big hit for him. And Lee Bryce's I Drive Your Truck was another song that almost went to Dierks. He first revealed during an intimate concert that he almost recorded it himself.
So Drink a Beer, when that came out, I remember Luke had a story with that. You know, like his brother had just passed. So, I mean, there was definitely a story to attach Luke to it. So now I can't even hear Drink a Beer without even thinking about Luke and his what he was going through at that time.
I wonder if these artists, like a Lee Bryce, who did I Drive Your Truck, I wonder if it's like, okay, Dirk, stop saying you passed on it. Like, stop saying that you were offered it first, because that makes me not seem like I was offered it first.
Yeah. I wonder.
Because I'm sure Dierks is a big star. The big songs go to him first, and then it trickles down.
Yeah, but I think people have to realize that's just the business of it. You know, this happens all the time where someone even cuts it and reserves it and won't let anyone else use it, and then they don't end up using it, and then it gets lost for a little bit, and somebody says, hey, whatever happened to that song that's so, oh, it's still there. You can do it now. You know, like there's so many stories like that where I think everyone's just used to that now.
Jake Owen was pitched this song, Big Green Tractor, which is a Jason Aldean song, but ended up turning it down. Song was a big hit for Aldean. And then She's Got Away With Words. Here you go. Blake Shelton recorded this one. Jake Owen liked the song, but decided to record it. Didn't record it for a good reason. He goes, he said, that's a really cool song, well written, but if I record this song, I'm taking it literally, and I don't want my ex to perceive that I did that to her.
It's interesting.
Because we all went, he's talking about Miranda Lambert.
Yeah. Yeah.
He didn't write it.
Again, very fitting.
Yeah. At the time.
And does that have a lot to do with picking songs, these artists?
Yes. Can they also tell a story how it relates to them?
Yep.
So they're just not going, I heard it, thought I had a good catchy chorus, and I recorded it.
Right, which would be the story for most of them.
But if you do find a good catchy chorus, you have to make up some story. Like, first time I heard it reminded me of 1997.
Right.
I was out on this farm, and a donkey came up. Right. So you just have to you have to create something then. Frankie Ballard was pitched Hillbilly Bone, which you may know right here.
He might be kicking himself on this one, huh?
That's a big hit, but I wonder, though, because this is Trace Atkins, Blake Shelton?
Yep.
I wonder, though, if it part of this hit was that it was big stars doing it, singing about something a bit trivial. Funny. I think if a new artist is doing it, people just go, who is this guy and what is he singing about a boner for?
Right. A hillbilly boner.
I think there was some credence with them singing it.
Yeah, possibly.
So Tim McGraw and T-Shirt, which is a Thomas Rhett song. Here you go. Now, Thomas Rhett wrote this song.
Yeah.
He said Tim McGraw had it on hold for a long time, so he couldn't put on his first record. Once he let it go, I latched that thing down and put it on my second record.
Yeah. Now, this is one where I hear it and I'm like, nah, Tim couldn't pull this one off.
I don't know, man. Tim's able to pull off some stuff that you don't think he can.
Again, it's one of those things where, like, Tim's older. He's a legend in our eyes. He comes out with a song called T-Shirt. You Were My T-Shirt. Like, Brought You Home From the Bar. Guns N' Roses video. We'd be like, Tim, come on.
But I think his song now does that, his new song.
Which one?
And Keith Urban does that with Pink now.
Sometimes they do that. But I just feel like Tim's got some more songs that are more his age appropriate.
Now, here's an interesting story. Carrie Underwood chose Jesus Take the Wheel as her debut single after winning American Idol. But according to Wide Open Country, it was originally pitched to Sarah Evans, who didn't like that stupid song.
Wow.
That's a quote.
Yeah.
That's pretty lucky for Underwood, who used it to kickstart her career. Massive song.
Yeah.
Massive song.
I can hear Sarah Evans singing this, too.
Lady Antebellum, Better Dig 2, which was a Band Perry song. They passed on the upbeat but dark song, which became a huge hit for the Band Perry. They could have done this.
Yep, for sure. Baby. Props to these bands and artists, man. They've really established a sound for themselves where we can hear a song and say, hey, I can see them doing that. Because it sounds like Lady Antebellum could totally do this song.
Jason Aldean almost did Drunk on You, which is a Luke Bryan song. Yeah. He liked the song, but he was looking for something different the day he heard it, so he shoved it aside. It was a win for Luke in every possible way. Didn't Luke write that too?
Yep.
Luke wrote it and was pitching it out. Jason didn't want it, much like the Thomas Tuesday situation, except Jason didn't lock it down. He was like, okay, if you're not going to record it, I'll record it. Massive. Maybe his first hit.
There was the Flyover States.
That's Jason Aldean. I'm talking about,
you're talking about Luke?
I'm talking about Luke. And Jason's first hit was not Flyover States. I don't think. We can go back to first hit.
Yeah, I'm interested.
I would bet. Let me think about this.
Because it's
Jason,
not.
I think Big Green Tractor was his first number one.
Oh, you think?
I think.
You're probably right.
Luke's was Do I.
Okay. All right, good. That's right. That sounds right. There's another song that kind of that tempo. What?
You think if Aldean would cut a song like this, though, we may not have had the jigent Aldean. Because, I mean, that's around the time when Aldean did get harder and change his sound a little bit. Before, he was very easy listening compared to what he does now.
Well, Aldean had a number 10 with Hicktown, but Why was his first number one.
Oh.
Really?
Yeah.
Hicktown.
And then Amarillo Sky was his third.
What was number two?
There we go. Flyover States. Hit me, Mike.
No. Number two?
Yeah. He said one and three.
Yeah, Hicktown, Why, then Amarillo Sky. Oh. That was his first three.
Oh, why?
They both sucked.
Yeah, not very good. We didn't make top 10.
And I'm in the Aldean fan club. Florida Georgia Line, Burning It Down. When they finished co-writing Burning It Down, they knew it was going to be a hit. And this is an Aldean song.
Did they both write it?
They wrote it, and then it went to somebody else because it wasn't in the timing of them making music for themselves.
Yeah, that's probably good.
Miranda Lambert in Downtown, which is Lady Antebellum song here.
Ooh.
Miranda Lambert had dibs on this song. Lambert, quote, very, very selflessly said, let Lady A have it.
Wow.
So, yeah.
Because, again, this can totally sound like a Miranda song.
Martina McBride had Independence Day, massive hit.
Mm-hmm.
What artist do you think could have pulled this off around the same time frame?
Trisha? Faith? Faith Hill?
Yeah, she could have. The answer I'm looking for is Reba McEntire.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
So Martina McBride caught some flack for the music video of this song, which was a great music video. But Reba McEntire was like, oh, I don't think I'm going to do this. But she had it and was going to cut it.
You know, we have to remember these decisions are tough for these artists. Like, they probably, how many times do you think they listen to this song before they say, ah, oh, should I do this or shouldn't I?
Do they just go, that song sucks?
Probably.
Do they hear so many
pass?
Songs? Yeah.
Yeah.
I would imagine it's much like when you listen to an album from an artist that is new to you and you kind of like, you're just popping through songs. And there's probably a couple songs you pass over pretty quickly that end up later on, you go back to it, it's like, oh, that's a great song. Why did I go over it so quickly?
Yeah, I would think the majority are like that, but there's got to be some that you know have been floating around, like so-and-so thought about using it, so-and-so thought about using it. And like, well, there's a reason there's a lot of people listening to this song.
Little Big Town almost cut American Kids that Kenny Chesney cut. We were Jesus, Sammy, Blue Jean, baby. Little Big Town had it on hold. Kenny Chesney, I believe he told this story on this podcast, Shane McAnally. Yep. He was on a plane with Kenny. And he had a bunch of his songs, and this one, he played this one, and he's like, man, I want that song. He's like, well, you can't. Little Big Town has it.
Mm.
He called him. He's like, can I have that song? And they were like, yeah.
The power of Kenny.
Yeah, he told us a story about how Kenny found it. Maybe Either he played it for him, or there was an email situation.
Yeah,
it was on his computer, and then that was it. If you want to go back and hear that with Shane McAnally, episode 45.
That dude's amazing.
Way back in 2017. So, and now he's on Songland, mm-hmm. and has kind of done his thing there. All right, there you go. Anything you'd like to say about that?
No, just great. I mean, again, great job by all these like A&R people, record labels, and artists to just distinguish themselves, because you can definitely hear the sound of an artist in a lot of these songs. That's pretty cool to me.
Do you want to do, before we go, Flashback Friday, 1994?
Yes.
Music-wise.
Yes.
1994, where were you?
Ooh, 94. I was angry, man. I was in middle school, probably in eighth grade or maybe freshman year in high school. Real into Pearl Jam.
You were angry. I was sad.
Well, Pearl Jam had just released Vitology.
Yeah.
Better Man.
Bugs.
Not For You.
Bugs.
Bugs. Corduroy. And that was my mantra. Like, this is not for you, man. You just don't understand what we're trying to do. Me and Pearl Jam.
Well, me with Nirvana, Stone Temple Pilots, Alice in Chains.
But you were the lonely side of grunge, huh?
Yes, absolutely. Wow. I was like, you guys just don't understand me.
Yeah. Well, that was me too, but I was pissed.
And I'm just going to be quiet and stay to myself.
Did you have Doc Martens?
I couldn't afford them.
I never wore them either.
Yeah, no, I couldn't afford them. But the biggest country song 1994 this day was Faith Hill, Wild One. The biggest pop song is Mariah Carey. And there's a hero comes along.
Oh, God, so good.
And the big news story from this year, 1994, Tanya Harding, at this time, was embroiled in controversy because why?
She hired somebody to stab, to beat Nancy Kerrigan on the leg.
Not hired.
Right?
Well, sort of.
Well, I guess nobody really knows.
That was the controversy. Do you know her ex-husband's name?
No.
Jeff Galooly.
Yeah, okay.
He orchestrated an attack on Nancy Kerrigan, her U.S. skating rival.
Yes.
Here's a clip from the footage right after the attack.
Why? I don't know. Some hard black stick. Something really, really hard.
Can you imagine? She's training and someone comes up and pops her in the leg with at the time, I'm a kid. It's just TV. Make believe.
Right.
But now as an adult, to think about, she's your competition. She's not your only competition. You got people from all over the world competing.
She was the main competition, the American competition.
Yeah. And so she says she knew nothing about it. But someone goes and clubs her. It's like a bookie who didn't get his money.
Yeah, mobster. Mobster style, for sure.
Pops her in the leg.
Yeah.
How awful.
This is crazy. Like, if you watched any of you watched the movie that came out with Margot Robbie?
Yeah, I saw it. Tanya?
I, Tanya.
Yeah. I, Tanya. Great.
It was good, huh?
Really good movie.
Both women then competed in the February 1994 Winter Olympics, where Kerrigan won the silver medal and Tanya Harding finished eighth. That is straight mobster, huh?
Yeah, man.
That's like ugly gangster.
Yeah, you're trying to take your competitor out, literally.
Yeah, that isn't good. Okay, there you go. Coming up, my chit-chat with Dina Carter, who I just think is such a wonderful person, and it's 25 years since Strawberry Wine, and that's coming up in just a second. Hey, Dina, how are you?
Good morning. How are you, love?
I'm good. Good morning. Hey, are you L.A. or Nashville or California? Like, what's the timing of this call? Is it extremely early for you?
No, I live near Grayton now.
I don't know where
in Florida.
Oh, you're East Coast?
Yeah, I'm actually Central, so I'm the same time as you, but we live down near 30A now, where everybody, Nashville South.
Oh, look at that. Well, you know, I have never been down there. A lot of my friends that are in the music industry kind of go there for their vacation because it's like the closest beach to us.
Yeah.
And you decided to live down there. Is that just the greatest place?
Oh, my gosh. Well, we've come here, obviously, for decades, because, like you said, it's where you come. You either go to Panama City or come down. I remember when Grayton, which houses are now like $10 million, you know, you could get a lot for $20,000 or something. when we were broke and waiting tables and going $20,000.
You know, you're talking about waiting tables, Dina. Did you ever bartend before you became a country music star?
I did.
What was that like for you?
Well, honestly, I loved it because I was studying to be a rehab therapist, rehabilitation therapist for stroke and head injury patients. That's what I got my degree in at UT. And when I would bartend, you know, you have your regulars that would come in. And a lot of the times in the afternoon, you'd have a lot of older people that would come in, usually gentlemen that would come in and just pour their heart out to you, like what's going on in their life. Then bartending to me was, it was always more about the relationships, and you knew what everybody's favorite beverage was. You know, they'd walk in and you could start making it for them. It just made them feel cared for and heard. And I know it sounds kind of silly, but it was a coveted job for me because I really loved the people. It wasn't about the booze. I mean, we had a great time, obviously, but it was really about getting to spend that time with people and just hear their most intimate feelings about life and what they're going through and taking care of them. I loved it.
Were you performing at all while you were attending bar?
I wasn't. I was just in like a sorority. We would do, you know, musical theater things and just whatever we did on campus. And I'd sing here and there, but nothing really pursued at the time, just kind of meddling around in it and getting my toes in the water. But when I was touring, my first big tour was Alan Jackson and, you know, Strawberry Wine Record and everything, I went back to Toddy's, which is one of the little places I bartended in Knoxville, and I bartended after the gig. We played the arena, and I went back to Toddy's and got behind the bar, and I was, like, working like normal. It was awesome.
So you're going to school, you're tending bar with the goal to become, like, a rehab specialist. Was it never in your mind at that point that country stardom awaited you?
I honestly felt like I didn't know it would be in country music for sure, but I knew in my heart that I had some kind of calling in entertainment. And honestly, I thought it was going to be like television or acting or something because I had done a lot of that in high school and in my college years that we did, like I said, do musicals really, but there were some plays that I did that, just kind of set the tone. And then when I graduated from college, there was a show that never got picked up, but it was like a Saturday Night Live type thing. It was a local Nashville variety show, comedy show like SNL, and it was called Checkmate. And please don't go find it because it's pretty bad. But I got cast in that show. So to answer a question, I just felt like it was more going to be like on television more so than in country music, and I just wrote songs really about the relationships I was going through at the time and what I was experiencing and this little journey of trying to figure out which path to take and who I was, and that's when the music started taking over.
So when was it then for you that you dedicated, because again, it is quite the dedicated thing to do, to go, I'm going to be a singer-songwriter, I'm going to tour, I'm like, this is going to be my life, and I'm going to be broke. Like, when was that for you?
I had that feeling in college that was a good precursor to the struggling artist thing because I paid my way through school. So, you know, I had to work really hard to pay off my college. I've worked at tanning salons and TCBY and worked pimp service for lawyers and the auto parts store on Second Avenue and like anywhere I could get a job. So the struggle for me was real, like just in the real life world of trying to be responsible and not put a financial burden on my family, and working hard to make sure I was, you know, stepping up and doing my part. And that transferred over into the struggle of, like, not getting discouraged when people would, I'd wait out in line. I did the Bluebird thing where you waited in the snow, you know, for an hour and a half to get in to have an audition to be at the Bluebird. And I don't know. It's just kind of how God's always mapped it out for me that, you know, one foot in front of the other, each step that I've taken has kind of prepared me for the next step. So I've just been trusting of that. And when you quit taking the steps is the problem, you know? So
we're going to talk about in a second, and I'm going to get to it here, about the 25th
anniversary of Strawberry Wine. But I want to talk a little bit about leading up to that. So you're, you know, doing what most new artists do, and you're playing the songwriter rounds, and you're meeting people. Was there anyone, I'll call it, in your class that was coming up the same time you were, and you guys hadn't hit it yet, but you look back and go, yeah, I knew so-and-so when they were just a songwriter before they had a hit or two?
Oh, yes, for sure, Kenny Chesney. I met him at Tom Collins Music on 16th when we were, it's where the, like, the big white Word Music building is now, but there was an old antebellum house there on that corner, and it had a very small parking lot in the back, and so we would all just park in there and put your keys in a basket so that if you had to move a car or whatever, it's no big deal. And he was blocking me in, and I was like, who's driving the, I can't even remember what car it was, but I had a white Honda, and I'm like, I need somebody to move. So he said, oh, it's me. Sorry, I'm Kenny, blah, blah. And he moved his car, and I moved out. We were just baby songwriters. This was probably 91 or 2, somewhere in there. So he was one. And Myla Mason, she came out in the 90s. She was, we were in a little band together before we each, like, the band dismembered and went our own ways. So I knew Myla. I'm trying to think who else. You know, Jay Joyce, who's the producer extraordinaire now, he and I worked together and did a whole bunch of songs, and he played with me. We had this band that we'd go play Ace of Clubs and 12th and Porter and all these cool places. And he and I were writing and producing these alternative songs. You know, I was trying to be like Alanis Morissette with sort of a southern twist to her. And so I've known Jay for eons and eons. And just Doug Lancio was with us in that deal. Kelly Looney played with us. It was just a great little community. Hello, Grimy. I've known Mike Grimy. He was in that group, all of us running around together, you know. So it wasn't just the artist. It was the community that I came up in that now everybody's having a lot of success. And it's so awesome to see. It's wonderful.
At what stage, while you were kind of cutting your teeth, did you hear Strawberry Wine?
It was. I had done a full record with Jimmy Bowen, a full Did I Shave My Legs for this album. And we had, I mean, it was a full deal. It was more orchestrated. It was very lush. And he brought in David Campbell to do all the strings for the album. And he's Beck's dad. It's such a cool little recollection of all this. Thank you for taking the time. But Bowen asked me, he said, how many strings? He was on the phone with David Campbell, and he said, how many strings do you want on this record? And he's looking at me, and I said, like all of them? And so they brought the whole National Symphony in, and they had a big laugh about that. And we sat at Emerald Sound and did I Shave My Legs for this record. And I asked if I could go overseas and tour first, because I knew being from Nashville, it could be brutal. And I just wanted to have like a total clean slate and get all the kinks out and work my live show and all that. So they said yes. And I flew over to London, mastered the record, and did a full tour with Jimmy Nail, who's an actor, with a British band. I had my guitar and that was it. I flew in and had a British tour manager and, you know, all Brits in my band. It was awesome. Flew back. Bowen had been fired, and we were in limbo for a little while at the label. So we were going to, Scott Hendricks took over. We re-recorded half of that record that I co-produced with Bowen. And we brought in Chris Farron to help finish some new songs. And that's when I brought in Strawberry Wine, and we danced anyway.
Wow, they came at the very, very end of a recut.
Yeah. So we kept the first half of Shave that I did with Bowen, and we just remixed it. Steve Marcantonio was engineer. We came in and added a few things, but we kept the strings and stuff. That was Count Me In. I could go through the list, but it was, I want to say it was I've Loved Enough to Know, Count Me In, Shave, That's How You Know It's Love, and there was one other one. I can't remember right now, but oh, Love Ain't Worth Making. That was an original. We brought in Farron and finished the last half, and I co-produced all of that, and that's when Girls didn't get credit. But I worked hard on it, and we all did. It was a team effort to get that record out, and after about 5 years, it finally saw the light of day as we know it now.
That whole process was 5 years long?
Roughly. I think I was signed originally in 1993, 1992 or 1993. So I was a development artist for 2 or 3 years. And then it was record, go tour, come back, re-record, then release. So yeah, it was a long, long road.
The first single.
And I was like.
The first single was Strawberry Wine, right?
Yes. The first single was slated to be I've Loved Enough to Know. And we had done the whole video and everything for it. And I was doing Strawberry Wine on my guitar and all the radio touring we were doing, you know, promo. And the phones were lighting up back then. Everybody was calling in like, what is that song? We want to hear that again. And I guess the regionals started calling the label and saying that the, you know, fans were responding to Strawberry Wine more than I've Loved Enough to Know. So they changed the single in time for a new release, did a new video and everything, like, because the people were screaming for Strawberry Wine and they listened and they did it. Scott Hendricks did a great job of turning all that around.
When was it for you that you realized this was going to be not just a hit, because that's a building process, but just a massive song that pretty much everybody knew? Like, was there a moment where you're like, uh-oh, this thing's a lot bigger than I had expected it?
Well, the thing about that, it was, yes, I would say the arenas, that was when it was really hitting home. And Alan Jackson was such a sweetheart to take us out for 2 years. We were out with him pretty much. And that made a big impact on the exposure. The video was a big deal with CMT and everything. And doing a lot of television, my management at the time, I was one of the first artists to do Letterman numerous times in Leno and all the morning shows and all these things, because there weren't a lot of country artists, period, but much less a new artist that was given those opportunities. So it was sort of the stars aligned up across the board and just the most awareness. It was unbelievable when the lighters started going up in these arenas. That's when I was like, what? And they weren't just singing Strawberry Wine. They were singing the record. Like, because, you know, we'd say Strawberry Wine till the end. And they would, when we'd come out, they were singing the whole thing, like every song that wasn't a single yet. And that was just like, what in the world is happening? But I still to this day never dreamed, and I'll be honest, that it would have the longevity that it's had. And just, you know, it's in recurrent radio and it's like become this country. It's like the Stairway to Heaven or Freebird or something. It's like this anthem for country music that I still am blown away that I got to participate in and be a part of, because I know that that is a very hard thing to do. And, you know, it took a village to make it happen, and just such talent. The writers, Matresa Berg and Gary Harrison, were so talented. And they told my story. They told the world's story. And I was just honored to be able to put my spin on it and put my heart behind it, because I lived it too.
It's got to be pretty cool that even today's young superstars are still singing it. For example, Sam Hunt came in a few weeks ago and it was like, hey, you can cover whatever you want. And he sang Strawberry Wine. Like, that's got to be pretty cool to see it continuing to inspire folks.
It is amazing. And I do not take it for granted. I'm so thankful for that. And all the YouTube videos, you know, all the sweet people and talented people that are out there putting it on their platforms and things too. And, you know, Kid Rock is like, it was his favorite makeout song or whatever. And Vanilla Ice, and like all of these people that I've met in my life that cross genres, that know the song. And, you know, it's just been such a gift. I'm so grateful.
You mentioned Kenny Chesney earlier about someone you knew when you guys were both starting out, but really one of my favorite country songs in the past, you know, 15 years is You and Tequila from Kenny and Grace Potter, which you wrote that song. So when you wrote that, were you writing it for Kenny or for another artist or for yourself?
Well, I wrote that with Miss Teresa, and I showed up at her house one day, and she had been out. She said that she'd been out at the wake for Harlan Howard because he had passed away, and they had been drinking and had tequila, and she was moving a little slow, and I'm like there to write for my record, which was my first record for Arista, so it would have been two records after Strawberry Wine albums, and we were writing it in 2002 for me for I'm Just a Girl for that album, and so my version is on iTunes on that album, but I got to go out on the road with Kenny and Keith and sing You and Tequila every night. So they would come out and watch that one song and then go get ready for their shows. And, you know, a lot of the inspiration was me living in California at the time, the lyrics. And it's got like this Tracy Chapman kind of droney guitar part in the beginning. And it's just really about not being able to shake someone, and you're in this beautiful environment. It's still really, you're still affected by the person. Just like, truthfully, tequila stays in my blood like for 3 days. It's like a drug. So I try to avoid it if I can. But, so we just put a lot of truth in that, and we're doing it for my record, not thinking a whole lot of it. And, my record didn't do a whole lot. But Kenny took it and made it this great, amazing hit. And he told me that it was, you know, he was going through a breakup at the time, and it just, he would play that song over and over driving up and down Mulholland in Malibu. And it meant a lot to me. Matresa had done a male version of it for a demo, and he had heard it, and he's like, man, this just makes sense. So he recorded it.
Did you think, Kenny, why don't you call me to be the other voice? You know, you got Grace Potter. Why wouldn't you call your friend?
I did tell him it needs to be a duet, and I was kind of waiting for the invite. But I understand, because Grace is amazing. And look, they, you know, they have to pull it together with other genres and branch out. And, you know, she was happening, and it worked out. I'm not upset about that. I think that the duet part I did suggest, but it's okay because it worked out. I'm just happy, again, to be a part of. And then Matresa and I got to go back to the Grammys, the CMAs, the ACMs, the AMAs, like all of these honors a decade after the first record. It was 10 years, almost. It was like 8 or 9 years. And we got an NSAI award for that, for songs that, you know, they wish they'd written the community. Like, that was to me like an Oscar coming from the Nashville community. It meant so much to me. So, yeah.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. You know, you talk about awards. Do you remember you win the CMA for Single of the Year, and, you know, they call your name, you're the winner, you go up on stage. Do you remember that, or did you kind of blur out at all?
No, I remember it vividly the first time. I really screwed up on the acceptance speech. Those are the things where you get blurry and you forget who to thank. And like, if you could have the do-over, that's what I have wished that so many times, that I could go back and be more thankful verbally and eloquent and all that. I was just I was nervous and trying to crack jokes and so embarrassing. But I was on the side of the stage talking to Trisha Yearwood, I think. Because I had just performed, and I was on the side. We got to perform a couple of times on that show. And I'd been talking to Ricky Skaggs about us going to the same elementary school. He was a little bit older than me. And he had Mr. Marion in fifth grade, and I had Miss Atkins, and I always wanted Mr. Marion. We're having, like, this whole conversation about these teachers in our school. And they were nudging him like, it's time to go announce this award. So he said, oh gosh, we'll finish this when I get back. So he went out there and opened the envelope. And that's when he said the Pride of Goodlettsville, because we'd been talking about it. And I ran out and was doing my goofball little cheerleading jumps. I was just like, so excited. I couldn't believe it. And that jump on him was our bond, because we'd been talking about it backstage. So that's what people didn't see.
Well, it's so great to talk to you. You just such sustained success, not only as an artist, but a songwriter. And listen, you're moving all over the continental United States. Can't even keep track of you. But it's really good to talk to you, as always.
Thank you. I'm so excited. And look, this is our 25th year. We're going to do some cool things. We have some irons in the fire for the first album for this year, to just be thankful to the fans and do something fun. So we're going to try to make that happen in the midst. You know, we talked about it before the world went crazy. So we'll see how we can pull it all together. But I'm very thankful to Capitol/Universal/whatever for still loving on me and supporting me in that way, and the fans too. And so look for it this year. And I'm happy for you for your engagement. I see you online. I'm so proud of you and happy for you.
Well, thank you very much. If you go, listen, I hope you go. And once we are able to play shows again and people can get on the road, like, I don't know if, because a lot of the artists that have had great records, like sometimes they'll just go out and play the whole record. I mean, you have 3 number ones on Did I Shave My Legs for This? I mean, and probably 5 of them, yes, I could sing every word back to right this second. So are you guys considering that, like just playing the record a few times as a, okay, 25 years, here's the celebration?
Yes. And, you know, I did that one time on the road. We'd been off the road for a little bit. I went back out and we just did the record from song 1 to the end, like in order, in sequential order. And the people went bananas because that's how they remember it. And for me, it's like nobody cares about the other records anyway. I've had like 9 records out. Who cares?
Wait, you get to play your other songs that you've written, though, because that's also cool to go, hey, I wrote this. But anyway, I think you're fantastic. I love you as an artist and a songwriter and a person. So whenever you're ready and you guys get it planned at what you want to do and you want to publicize it, just let me know. I'm happy to help you out.
Thank you, Bobby. I appreciate it. And listen, I want to thank you for always being so kind, so welcoming, so gracious. You always hug me. When I see you at events and things, you go out of your way to come and be kind. And your whole audience, I know that they know how awesome you are, but they need to know that, you know, off the mic as well, because you're a stand-up guy, and I'm just so happy for your success, because you deserve it, and you've meant a lot to me, and I thank you.
Now, I feel awkward, but that's very kind of you. I don't do well with compliments, but so I'm going to end it there. Dina, great to talk to you. I can't wait to see your face again, and I'll see you soon, okay?
Thank you.
All right, bye, Dina.
All right, Bobby, be well.
Bye-bye. And you guys, by the way, go to her merch. Go get merch. All you have to do is go to Dina.com/store, DEANA.com/store, and go get merch. Help an artist out. Buy some of that merch, right, Dina?
Get it out of my garage.
Get it out of her garage. That's right. All right. Bye, Dina.
Bye. Thanks.